Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled and fact-filled episode of the Michael and Patty Show, bringing to you over 40 years of full-time Prince Edward Island real estate experience, having handled thousands of transactions. This podcast addresses things that have been emailed, texted, experienced, and called into us. We're going to answer those questions on this podcast, and we're going to start with building lots. Patty, good day. Welcome to the Charlottetown waterfront.
Hi, Michael. I also want to just point out to our listeners something that you just received as well. Congratulations on 26 years in real estate. I think that's commendable.
Well, thank you, Patty. And just as I said to you when I received that letter, which of course I had to print out on my own printer and pay for the ink, it's kind of ironic. You used to get those every 5 years or 10 years, but as soon as you get past 25 years, you get one every year. It's like you're just hanging on. They're just wondering if you're still alive.
It's like your 100th birthday certificate that the Prime Minister gives you every year.
You've made it another year. Not too many people do that and they're still alive. But thank you very much. I printed it out and put it with last year's.
Sounds good.
So last weekend, Patty listed a piece of land. And right beside this piece of land was another piece of land for sale. So naturally, being the inquisitive type that she is, and I am, we wanted to see what this other agent was doing to promote this property. And what did we find?
Very limited marketing material put together.
We found three pictures from the road. So imagine you're looking at a building lot that's 2 acres on the water with exceptional panoramic views of the cruise ship Charlottetown and a bay, a river, and the pictures that the vendor has marketing the property is three pictures from the road. And what's on the road? It's trees and brush.
Yes.
Three pictures of trees and brush, which led me to think, what could a possible buyer ask their agent for to get as much information as possible on a building lot? So this particular topic, we're going to restrict to building lots. So building lots in PEI are typically between, well, as small as 0.1 of an acre, typically 0.25, 0.35, 0.33. Newer ones are going to be closer to 2 acres. Most modern subdivisions would be with an acre to 2 acres, acre and a half, and newer subdivisions would have a buffer zone. We won't get into discussing buffer zones, but I will tell you that is something that's been put in place to protect you from erosion typically. Here's a list of things you may want to ask your listing agent for, or your purchaser's agent, or have on your listing if you're looking to sell your lot and you've opted not to go with the three pictures of the hedgerow.
Yeah, and I think this is a really important topic because many will send us information. They'll send us an email saying, I'm looking for more information. But when you ask the buyer, what specifically are you looking for? I don't even think they know. They just feel like there's got to be something more that I should be inquiring about, hoping that the realtor or whoever's the listing agent or their buyer's agent would be able to provide that. So today we just feel it's really important to give you that list of things. If you're the listing agent, what should be on that listing? Or if you're a buyer, what questions, what are you looking to ask?
So it's a bit of a long list, but we'll cover it quickly, and I may, or I may not, attach these to the show notes. Number one, and this is in no specific order, a survey, but more importantly, a survey that's actually an approved or stamped survey. Sometimes you'll see agents affix preliminary surveys, which are nothing more than a fancy drawing. You want a survey that's been stamped, newer the better.
Correct. I agree.
Number two, a perk test, percolation test. The newer, the better. And if you're on a bigger lot, it's nice to see, or even a smaller lot, it's nice to see where that perk test was done.
Yes, it helps you with your plans when you go to develop or build on it.
Electricity. When someone says electricity is there, it'd be nice to know that it's actually there. Our last episode, we talked about a listing that the vendor said it was there, and it didn't exist until 2 miles back from the property. Find out what access to electricity is. If you have any questions about electricity or the cost to run it, providing it's over land and it's not underground, the Maritime Electric site is an awesome resource in most cases. So make sure you've got electricity. Paved roads. if you do have a paved road and you're selling a property, it's nice to have a picture of that, because in my opinion, it's an important thing, because I'm not driving my car down some clay road in the spring and sinking to my axles.
Yes, and it also increases the value, I think, if it's on a paved or year-round road.
Beach shots. If you're on a nice beach, like this particular property is on a fairly decent beach, it'd be nice to have shots of that, because people are inevitably going to ask, what's the beach like? And in PEI, we have a multitude of different types of beaches that aren't all nice white sand like you see in some parts of Florida. Soils map. It's nice to see a soils map, which will show you where you can put your septic system. Perk test will also tell you that. This would probably apply more to larger properties. Ortho photos, which are like an aerial photo looking directly down with the property lines indicated on it. Keeping in mind those property lines may or may not be accurate. The only thing that's accurate is, in fact, the survey. Engineering documents, if you're looking in a larger subdivision, you know, could be 20 lots or 30 lots, they typically would have engineering documents on hand that would give you the soil types. Drone shots, always nice to have drone shots from the air. And if you're a seller, you want to make sure those are not overdone or they don't have a negative impact, like pictures of pig farms, nuclear reactors, swap land. What else do they put in that would deter a potential buyer?
That's just
a federal prison system. Things like that. You typically don't want to highlight drone shots.
I think we're safe on the island.
Any documents pertaining to the property, obviously, if you've obtained previous building permits, perk tests, whatever, test them to the listing, homeowners association documents, restrictive and/or protective covenants. Maybe there's homeowners association fees for cutting the grass and plowing the snow in the winter. Have those documents attached. What do you think about people that will actually supply building plans for potential houses that could be built on that lot?
I'm just starting to see that.
We've been doing it for years.
Have you, Michael?
SunburyCove.com. Check it out.
Okay.
Yes. Builders, if they can supply a sign that says this house can be built here for X number of dollars, I think that's a huge selling advantage.
I think it would be a selling advantage, especially some lots are unique and you may lack no different than a house. People, if they go into a vacant house and they look at the rooms, they can't visualize maybe their furniture in there. So I guess the same would apply to a lot. If they have a difficult time coming up with a creative idea on how, what could I develop on that, that would help, that would solve that problem.
Plus it gives them a price that they can build that house and that lot for X number of dollars. Good signage. Some agents believe in having a copy of the survey or the ortho or both on the sign is great. Some agents will charge the vendors some or all of the price of that sign, because signs can get very expensive very quick. In Patty's case, most of her signs have probably, what, 60% of your head?
No, I don't have my head on. And the thing with signage...
And it has to be a high school photo too, right?
The thing with signage on PEI, though, is our weather and our winds sometimes that we get. So it is not unheard of to go through some, if it's a, especially a piece of land, 3-4 signs over the duration of the time of the listing.
My signs are constructed out of concrete with reinforced rebar, so they don't go anywhere, because I expect that lot could potentially be on the market for decades. Probably not. There's also signing bylaws, which means you can't be putting arrows 25 miles from your lot, because technically they're only supposed to be on the parcel that's for sale, especially on tourist routes. Landscaping, bush cutting, and clearing trees for view. If you have a lot, we just did this here last week with one, you can clear the space where the house is going to go. You can clear some of the trees along the shore, as long as that's legal and allowed in that subdivision. You can clear the entranceway, and you can also install a culvert. So again, your imagination doesn't have to be that extended to envision what your new dwelling is going to be like.
I like those ideas.
It's nice to know how many feet are on the water for IRAC application purposes.
Yeah, it's actually needed to know if there's not a buffer, what is the footage of the water frontage.
Next comment I have in my list here is buffer zones. Be aware if there's a buffer zone, which is an area you typically cannot build on.
Yeah, and the buffer zone, questions that you're going to want to know is who owns the buffer zone? And as if it's the HOA that owns the buffer zone, then that comes into play with IRAC, depending on how many lots are in the subdivision. If it's owned by the developer, then typically, and I mean, these, I would verify everything with IRAC in case they've decided to change the rules. But if the developer owns it and it is a waterfront piece, then you should be good.
The other thing about buffer zones is typically they're for free use of anyone within that subdivision, whether it's the HOA or the developer owns it, unless, and you can put this in your deed, as long as the HOA or the developer approves it, you have an exclusive easement. Little tip, get that exclusive easement, then no one can sit and put a parking, they can put an RV and a picnic table on your buffer zone. Having lines on pictures. This is controversial, and in a lot of ways it shouldn't be done, but some agents will do it to illustrate where the lot is. Ideally, it would be wonderful if you could draw those lines going from the actual survey markers, but trying to see survey markers from a drone that's up 100, 200 feet is pretty tough to do. So those lines on the pictures are basically a very, very rough guideline. Do not go by them and think that they're a legitimate source for accurate information pertaining to where the property lines are.
Yeah, and if you're a realtor thinking that, well, all the other agents are doing it, so I probably should do it as well, just be very careful and put a disclaimer on that these lines are approximate.
Otherwise, you're opening the door for a potential lawsuit. Common sense stuff. Do your pictures on sunny days. Do them when the grass is green and you've got nice vegetation and leaves on the trees. Anytime from October through probably May is probably not the best time to do the pictures. You can do it at that point, but I'd probably revisit that property when everything's nice and beautiful in the summer and redo them if it's still available. How about, here's an idea. How about a walkthrough where I get out of my vehicle and I walk the property from front to end, from the road front right down to the waterfront, showing them, in fact, what they're buying and what the content of the property is as far as what kind of trees and vegetation and wetlands there are.
As long as that is the intention and you're not showing them where survey markers are, I think that's it's a great opportunity to get to know your clients, help them build their dream. You get to know the property a little bit better, maybe find some things that you might want to include in your offer. Or there could be an old boat or an old shed that they don't want to be responsible to have to dispose of. You would be able to, even an old vehicle parked in the back or in the woods. Just gives you a little bit of a heads up if you're writing an offer that you want some of these things maybe taken care of. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why walking the property would be a good idea.
What about drone shots from our maximum altitude, which is 400 feet, showing a little more about the surrounding area so I can see maybe there's golf courses and maybe there's entertainment restaurants and beaches in the distance?
Those all do have value. They are a little hard to see from the drone shot for sure. However, if it's not in the city, I think they're an asset. It shows acreage. It would show if there's farmers' fields around, how developed the area is. If it's in the city and all you're doing is showing a bunch of rooftops, I don't think it has as much value.
Well, we're talking about building lots here.
Yes.
And not necessarily anything in town. What about drone shots straight down, just like an ortho, but they're accurate right up until that day they were shot?
I like
the orthos could be years old.
Yeah, I do like those.
And right now, just as a statistical number, we have 1,270 active land listings, of which 263 are currently under $50,000. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. And just to timestamp this, is October 6, 2024.
Patty, next subject. You can cover it. We had a question here. Somebody sent from the podcast, actually. Can you please explain how to become a real estate agent in PEI? I'll hand it over to our local broker expert here, Patty, to answer that question.
Well, I wouldn't call myself an expert, but I do know the process.
Don't I just need a big car, a fancy suit, sunglasses, and a briefcase?
I think you need a little bit more than that. To begin, if you're considering becoming a real estate agent, Many ask, can I do it part-time or do I have to be able to do this full-time? I usually, when I'm interviewing new interested real estate agents, I ask them, do they have some capital behind them? Do they have a source of income? What is their current financial position and situation? Because real estate, it can take 3 to 6 months, best case scenario, to start seeing perhaps a sale closing. It's not an easy business to get into. It requires a lot of training if you're going to do this business well, protecting yourself as well as your client. Past that, they decide, yes, this is for me. I want to get into real estate. You would click on or go to, on Prince Edward Island, the PEI Real Estate Association website. They have, and it's very user-friendly, lots of information on it. You would do the first course that we would have is the Real Estate Career Preparation course. It is designed to give you a little bit more information about the business, what you can expect, asks you even more in-depth questions. And many people, after they do, and I believe that course is around $250, once they go through that, a lot will make the determination that, yes, this is for me, or I'm still interested, or no, I don't think this is actually for me, so I'm not going to move forward, which is a great tool, a great starting point, because once you pay the $3,500 or so to do the pre-licensing course, and then you find that out, it's a little more frustrating, and you're out over $3,000. So not everyone wants to just give money away while they're trying to feel it out. That's why the real estate prep course is so important. Once you get into the course, which is done on Tuesday nights for a series of 9 weeks, there's licensing, you learn about the Trading Act, the province rules and regulations and bylaws, IRAC, all sorts of fun information, a little bit on contracts and that. Then you would be interviewing brokerages, looking to see which one aligns with what kind of support or expectations you have for yourself in when you're getting into the business. And welcome to the industry. The fun just began.
So you need a broker to hold your license. But let's say I want to become a broker. How long do I have to have my license held by a broker before I get my brokerage license, Patty? Because I know there is numbers thrown out in the past which were generated from conjecture. There's made up willy-nilly numbers that didn't actually align with the provincial regulations nor the bylaws or rules and regulations for the PEI Real Estate Association. So how long and how many transactions do I have to do to open up Michael Posnick Real Estate Company Limited Incorporated International?
Unfortunately, are you done? Unfortunately, it is zero. However, I would really recommend against doing that. In my opinion, I feel if you're going to be looking for a brokerage, the broker or who is doing the training at the brokerage should have done minimum 500, preferably 1,000 transactions if you really want to be protected and safeguarded against any issues, liabilities, things that might come up while you're in the business. But unfortunately, and I'm hoping they change that, what you would hear in the business and the industry is they'd say you need to be licensed for 2 years. That's what I was always taught and told. However, Michael, doing all his due diligence and digging through our bylaws and rules, there is no official number as of probably even today. I believe the association's working on getting that changed, but that is not in effect, I don't believe, today.
Where it actually came from is the association told somebody they needed 2 years before they become a broker, and they had their lawyer actually read their regulations, which is probably something they should consider doing once in a while. And they said there's nothing that substantiates your claim that 2 years is required, and they got their broker's license. So it wasn't something I researched. It was something somebody else spent their money on and their lawyer's time on, and then I benefited from that, okay, which we shared here.
Yes.
The thing I will warn you about when you get into the broker or the real estate agent testing and the courses is you're going to get inundated with all these opinions that come from people that have never been in real estate or their family that's never been in real estate, telling you which broker to go with and which is the best and focus on this, this, and that. And you're also going to get inundated because what happens is this list becomes public and the brokers pick it up. And then you're going to get all these emails about XYZ and ABC brokerage and join us. And here's what we have to do. We're going to have free seminars for you to watch. These brokerages, like when I see that, I think like puppy mill. I'm thinking if they're recruiting at such a high level, how much attention am I going to get from the broker if they're spending so much time just trying to bring numbers into their brokerage so they can have a, you know, a 2 or 3 page spread in the real estate magazine that shows all the agents that they have, which probably aren't doing anything for the most part.
And just to clarify, the list when you register for the course is not public per se. There's a little
public to the brokers.
There's a little box when you fill out your application that asks if you are okay to be contacted by brokers on the island. Again, we're only speaking, and that's all our experiences is from Prince Edward Island. If you check yes to that box, then your name goes on a list that is sent off to the brokers on Prince Edward Island, and they have free opportunity to go ahead and solicit you to join their brokerage.
Now, the people teaching the course, do they have any affiliation to brokerages, like maybe own them or work with them, and they're there to solicit for new agents to join their firm?
I am not going to go there in this. That I'm not going to comment on that.
Know who you're talking to. Know who they represent, because again, you're going to get a lot of misinformation and bias information talking to different people that may, in fact, actually be solicitors for brokerages, be involved with or receive a portion or a percentage of your income that plays into some larger scale business plan. Just be careful where you get your information from. Next conversation, this time of the year being October, many people are going to take their properties off the market and put them back on in the spring, which is a really bad idea for many reasons. One of which is you could actually get more money for your property doing the inverse, because there's less product out there and there's always people looking to buy. But let's say I own a house and I want to sell it, but I don't want to move until next April. Can I do that?
Absolutely. It gets done. This is the prime time season to be able to convince a seller, if you're a buyer that doesn't want to move until after winter, so next April. Yes, it is done all the time.
On our listing sheets, there's a field there that says possession, POSS dot is the abbreviation, and it indicates when the purchaser can take possession of that property. So if you don't want to move until April, start your selling now, and you'll probably end up with more money potentially statistically because there's less product on the market. The other thing you can do, couldn't I use this as a leverage tool? If I don't want to move till April and someone says I want it in December, couldn't I use it as a leverage tool to ask for a couple hundred grand more?
I don't know.
Maybe $60?
Yes, it would actually be a really good leverage tool for a seller to be able to say, you're pushing me out of my house sooner than I wanted. I didn't want to move till next April. You really want it, you're going to pay for it. So yes, it could. It could potentially get you a little bit extra money.
Square footage calculations and land sizes, are these written in stone and are they accurate? I know they're very contested in many markets, and in some markets in the States and Canada, they've actually removed square footage and room sizes because it's such a point of contention. What are your thoughts on PEI real estate? Should I trust these numbers implicitly?
No, never.
Explicitly?
I will tell you, our office did, one of our training sessions was we went out to a house, and the exercise was, I wanted to prove a point to my agents at the office. So everybody partnered up. They all measured the house, all did the rooms, all did the building dimensions, and all submitted square footage calculations for main living area, basement living area, and total living area. And all our numbers were different, which was such an eye-opener for everyone in our office. so that they could go back and better inform, have the conversation with their seller, but better inform their buyers and just say, if square footage is important to you, perhaps that's something that the purchaser should do, because we all got different square footage calculations.
And there's also a debate as to whether you include the bathrooms, common hallways, garages, unfinished space. What's a finished space? If I have 2x4s and drywall, is that finished? Or maybe it's painted, maybe it's not painted. Is there a carpet or any hardwood floors, or is it cement?
Yeah, like it's supposed to be floor to ceiling. However, if you just have a concrete floor and you threw the walls are done and the ceiling's done and you just threw a piece of carpet down, does that constitute? And I mean, in my opinion, yes, but...
So these condos you're seeing in the big cities that have concrete ceilings and floors and walls, and they're calling this modern, which is not what it is, they have zero square footage based on that.
Well, they would consider that a finish. Concrete is their finish.
I think you're playing on both sides of the street here.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying this is, it's a basement.
And this is
area,
why you get it's complicated.
100%.
I had someone that wanted to list their property, and then they turned around and listed with a buddy just for something to do. I checked the pictures, and we've talked about this many times before, and they had pictures of the garbage cans, two vehicles in the driveway. It was shot at 6 o'clock at night, so the sun was just going down, so it was this really obvious, horrible shadow. The property's still on the market weeks later or months later, even though an identical property down the road sold in the day. Wouldn't it be prudent for a vendor to check their pictures, since those are the main thing that people are going to be looking for when they're browsing houses?
Yes, and it's hard because when you first see your living room or your kitchen and it's public on, you know, online, the World Wide Web, there's a little sense of excitement, but really try to... turn off the excitement dial that your property's live and look at your property pictures through a really critical eye. And if you were the buyer, would you purchase it? It's really hard to do because you're very biased about your home, but there's so much more that your pictures do or impact on the price of your property than just showcase, well, here's my kitchen, living room, bathroom. Like, you really need to look at your photos.
I'm looking for a house in PEI. I'm typically out of the province. Maybe I'm in Ontario or Quebec or Alberta. And I see on the cut sheet that this house has been on the market for 37 days. The next house has been on the market for 215. I'm trying to use this as a gauge to gauge what the motivation would be behind the vendor. If I can put a lowball offer in that house that's been on for 273 days, versus the one that's only been on hypothetically for 15 or 20. Can I go by those numbers, and why not?
There's a lot in there, Michael. So if I'm looking at a property and it's been on 30 days, you should request the history so that you can see, was it listed with multiple agents? Is this somebody that's playing? Because it is starting to be done, I'm noticing this year, where they're resting a listing or allowing it to expire. And then 2 weeks later, because we're not allowed to bring them back on unless they've been off the market for 2 weeks, then they're bringing it back on. So it's got a new MLS number. It looks like a brand new listing. If you're a smart buyer and you have a good buyer's agent, they're going to pull the history for you and let you know what the story is. Now, when you look at the story of the property, assuming that there is other listings on it, where did they start at and where are they today? Were they trying to price it based on 2021, 2022's numbers and they're slowly sobering up and coming to reality? Is this just a seller maybe with unrealistic expectations?
Getting back to days on market, the point of the question was to say that just because you see 49 days on the market doesn't mean it hasn't been out for 490 days.
I know what you were saying. What else, what does that tell you, or what should you be looking for?
What I should be looking for is what you said, the history, right?
Just ask for the history. It will tell the story of the listing.
Showing feedback. I'd love to hear your thoughts as to whether this is something all vendors are. What's the feedback? What's the feedback to get a showing? What's the feedback? In my opinion, either there is an offer or isn't the offer. Do you find showing feedback for the most part useless or really useless?
Again, that's a difficult, it really doesn't do any good in the sense that if they don't have an offer. They don't have an offer. The person didn't want to buy your property. I have had sellers who are high seer analytical personalities. They dissect the feedback and they feel, should I change my paint color? Should I, well, did you tell them this? Did you tell them, you know, these factors? If the property doesn't suit the buyer's needs, it doesn't suit the buyer's needs. So the feedback can either stress out a seller, it can tick them off, or it could just be, you know what, they're not interested. But it depends on the seller, and you really need to know your client as a listing agent.
Unless there's massive latent defects, in the sense that there's 3 feet of water in the basement, or it has a horrible smell or something, something that can be fixed or is obvious to buyers that's going to be a detriment to the potential sale, all I ever get 99% of the time is, yeah, good showing. They're going to think about it and get back to me. Or I get, it wasn't for them. So on both accounts, it's not really productive. And of course, your clients, based on what you've told me, they're going to hound you to death. Well, they're thinking about it. Have they thought about it? Do they want to buy it, Patty? Check in every week. Did they think about it? Are they going to buy it? That's a very nice way of saying, we're not offering on this property, and we may or may not be interested down the road, so don't wait by your phone.
Yeah, and it's also something that if a listing agent or the seller is telling their agent to go chasing after the buyer, you just lost your leverage. You just look like you're the desperate seller, and the buyer's going to come back going, well, if they're chasing me down, we haven't found anything yet. Maybe we will come back. These guys are clearly motivated to sell.
And we'll put in a nice lowball offer since they're nice enough to give us the leverage to indicate that how desperate they were to sell.
Yes, so be mindful of that.
Have you ever had a client get an offer on the property? And let's say it's a cash offer. Everything looks good, closes in 60 days. They decide to go out and spend that money before they've received it. And then the deal goes bad.
Yeah, that can impact both sides, actually. Do not spend anything. Do not change your financial situation or structure. It's not closed until the money exchanges hands. No flights, no trips, do nothing. No car purchases. Don't even buy a bunch of furniture or anything, because lenders all the way up until the week of closing can re-audit the file. And if they don't like what they see or pull your credit report or anything, they can pull that financing. So,
well, this is a cash deal.
Is it a cash deal?
It's a cash deal. So what's happened with me in the past is people have had horrifying medical news that they're not going to be around for very long, which is extremely unfortunate. So they'll back out of a deal. I had one instance where the husband gambled away all their money at a casino, $700,000 or $800,000 of it. I've had numerous situations that were apparently cash. I've had deals where they said they were cash, especially when the market was overheated here, where it wasn't cash, it was financed, and the financing was pulled, even though they had in the offer that it was cash, but they were financing it behind the scenes, and they couldn't get the money on the day of closing.
Yes, I've experienced that.
So it can happen in anything. I think we've covered it. Unless there's anything else you see you want to cover before we go?
No, I think there's a lot of good information. Nice to see that we've got questions coming in. I think we've covered everything today.
Well, thank you everyone very much for listening. Be sure to follow or subscribe. Give us a star rating and some feedback. And if there's anything you'd like to know about Prince Edward Island or PEI real estate, reach out to us and we'll be sure to consider you for possibly maybe consider one day thinking about answering the question on the show.
Now, we'll answer as many or all questions that we do get.
Good.
Honesty is the best policy.
Have a good day, everyone.
Have a great day.